Chapter 4. I spent the evening traversing the halls of the fortress, and I carefully inspected all the hard work the tribes and my soldiers had put in during my absence. The muck and stench were cleansed from the hallways, and each room had been emptied of its contents. Makeshift cots and sleeping pads filled the bedrooms, so it was obvious many people had been spending their nights there, and I wondered how long the infighting had been going on for. Eva, Kalia, and Zenda each claimed a room in the fortress for their own purposes, but they took the space away from some of the tribal members in the process. I made sure to keep close whenever the interactions occurred, but no one argued with my women, so I went about my own business. I took the warlord's personal chambers as my own, and I tossed my pack into the corner before I jumped onto the massive, fur-covered, king-sized bed. It was good to be the god of time. I had whatever I wanted, when I wanted it, and everyone respected my authority. I had dominion over most of Soreal, several islands in the Eastern Ocean possessed total faith in me, and soon the entire Kotar Desert would bow before my power and might. My army had also continued to grow in prestige and training, which was why Ryandale quickly disappeared to check in on our forces. The general ran a tight ship, and I trusted him to inform me of any pertinent details. The four tribes I'd formed the closest bonds with stayed in the courtyard of the fortress, and whatever rooms were left to them once my soldiers and women had laid their claims, and I called for a meeting with the chiefs I was most familiar with over dinner. I arrived in the dining hall first with my women and Ryandale at my back, but shortly after we'd taken our seats, the tribespeople began to file into the chamber. Each chief brought their own personal entourage of high-ranking tribal members, but I recognized the majority of the faces among the newcomers. We had plenty of food to feed everyone, so I wasn't worried about the unexpected additions, but it showed how much they respected my power that they felt the need to boost up their own. The chiefs sat down first, and the long table quickly filled with dark-skinned faces and stoic expressions. Chief Tikini, the leader of the Kamaku tribe, Mahini's people, sat closest to me, as was appropriate, and it pleased me to know the chiefs knew their places. Chief Wambutu of the Trahana tribe placed himself beside the Kimaku leader, and the Trahana tribe chief nodded my way with a respectful air. The leader of the fire mages, Chief Kwaki, sat at the next closest chair to me, and Chief Rafiti of the Gupwana tribe took the last of the honored seating. The rest of the entourages took up the remaining seats, but some had to sit at a secondary table to the side. I spotted Makino, Akina, and Ristuni among the Kunwaki tribe members, and I smiled at Sereni, my wife's cousin, as she joined her fellow Kimaku tribesmen. Sereni had married into the Trahana tribe, but she also had close ties with the Gupwanas, so she was a valuable asset to have at any peace negotiations. Plus, she was a strong and fearless warrior who made the Southern Realm proud with her determination and grit. And I got to claim her as my kin. Some of the entourage remained on their feet, and with a nod from the chiefs, the tribespeople began to serve wine into everyone's chalices. Then I nodded my thanks to the chiefs and lifted my cup to give a toast. "To the recent demise of the asshole who stank up the place," I said in the common tongue. "May his corpse rest in pieces." The tribespeople whooped and cheered with undulating howls, and I grinned as we all took a swig of our drinks. But then Chief Kwaki lifted his cup to give a toast as well. "To the leader of free people around the world," he said in a solemn tone, but I was proud to hear him speak in the language I'd created. "Sir Sebastian, the God of Time!" The fact that he'd learned how to say even one of my titles in a clear tongue made me proud of all I'd already accomplished in the Kotar Desert. I'd mapped the majority of the northern half of the realm, and I'd created a dialect that blended so many tongues into one that any tribespeople could understand it. I'd laid the foundations for unity and understanding among them, but I still needed to finish what I'd started. I would bring peace to the Kotar Desert. I had to. Besides, there were still so many more mysteries to uncover in the vast wilderness of the desert. There were the locked catacombs to explore, the sorcerer to hunt down, as well as countless unknown adventures laying ahead of me. Excitement shivered down my spine as I contemplated the future of the medieval fantasy world I'd begun to conquer. The world was my literal playground. Then the other chiefs all mimicked a similar toast to our victories and successes beneath my reign, and my chest swelled with pride at how they were all getting along now that I'd returned. They trusted me, and I would show them it was well placed. First things first, though, I needed to get them to leave each other alone. I made a new safe point before I began the first phase of my plan. "I've brought you all here together to break our fast in peace. You have all traveled a great distance with me, and I have trusted you to guard my people as you have entrusted me with yours. We have become friends, and I know the future will be great if we all work together." Displeased muttering echoed from down the table, but I was too far away to make out the exact words. The chiefs glanced at each other with skepticism and hesitation, but none argued loud enough for me to counter, so I decided to keep going. "You have saved lives from other tribes you previously fought against. You let people you called enemies save your lives. Things have changed. You have changed. And there's no going back to the way things were before."
"Before the warlord showed up, everything was fine," Chief Rafiti said in a voice loud enough for everyone in the room to hear. "Let us return to the old ways."
"You speak a new tongue," I said with a pointed arch of my eyebrows. "Do you not realize the benefits you've already gained from joining with the others?"
"I speak this tongue to please the God of Time. You leave, I speak Kupwana. Everyone should learn Kupwana, best tongue of desert."
"Aye, aye!"
echoed throughout the room, as well as more undulating howls. I lifted my hand to signal for silence, and a hush fell among the tribespeople once more. I was glad they followed my commands so obediently, but I just wished I could force them to get along with each other even when I wasn't around. I would figure out a way. "What is the main problem here?" I shook my head in disbelief at their stubbornness. "Why not put your differences aside in favor of peace?"
"Kupwana fought hard,"
Rafiti argued, and his speech became more halting as he became more emotional.
"We deserve Grand Fortress!"
"Hey, calm down," I urged with a dismissive flap of my hand. "I've already established the fortress as my home base in the desert. It's mine, and if you want, you can duel me for it."
"I could not win against a god,"
Rafiti sighed and shook his head. "Then let it go," I frowned. "That's the last I'll hear of it." I saw a couple of the other chiefs look like they were about to say something, so I made eye contact with each and every one of them to give them the chance to speak up, but no one said a word. I shrugged, flashed them all a broad smile, and gestured to the feast spread out before us. "Let us enjoy a night of peaceful gathering before you each return to your own territories. Eat up! Enjoy, drink, and be merry. The night is young. Who knows? You may just like each other by morning." There were a few light chuckles following my words, and I took that as a good sign. But I listened closely to the whispered conversations transpiring all around the table as I ate. The muttered bickering wasn't the most pleasant background noise for dinner, but it gave me a lot of insights into the inner workings of the tribespeople. The Kanwaki tribe were the only ones who remained silent, and the fire mages all wore stoic expressions as they ate their meals. I caught Akina staring at me across the table multiple times, and I winked when I made eye contact with the desert beauty. She blushed and looked down at her plate, and she didn't look my way again. I could tell she'd missed me, but she was too shy to say anything along those lines in such a public setting, so I made a mental note to go stare at the stars later. The Kanwaki woman had always managed to find me during my desert travels whenever I found a moment to stargaze, and she'd spent several hours telling me about the various constellations. I couldn't wait until she warmed up to me some more, and now that I was back in the desert, I had all the time in the world to get to know her better.
"Enough bickering,"
I said in my godly voice when I'd finally had my fill of eavesdropping and observing my guests.
"The time for peace is upon us. Will you answer the call, or will you find yourself on the other end of my blades?"
That shut them up.
The Kanwaki tribe will return to our nomadic ways, Chief Kwaki said in a solemn tone. I look forward to fighting Naga by your side in the future, Great One.
Thank you, Kwaki, I said with an incline of my head. I look forward to fighting with your fire mages again, although I hope there is no need.
The Naga still roam the sands. They must be eradicated, and you have shown us a better way.
Happy to help, I grinned.
The Trahana tribe will return to our lands,
Chief Wombutu agreed with a sad expression.
We will miss being in the presence of your greatness.
I will make sure to visit each tribe during my time in Kotar, I promised the entire table. I will take time to make sure you are all happy and where you need to be before I return to Soreal. The other chiefs nodded their agreement, and we all finished our meal with a spicy fruit wine. The background chatter was much more pleasant after that, and I decided I was ready to do a redo and get it perfect.
Ding!
Then I sat at the head of the uneaten feast once more. The chiefs had all just given their toasts, and we were about to eat. Thank you all for coming tonight, I said to the table at large. I know you all respect me and are willing to follow my commands, but I have one more task for you. Confused expressions filtered across the table's occupants' faces, but I paused for a moment to build suspense before I continued. I wish for you all to return to your original territories and homelands. I will tour the desert as I finish my map of the realm, and I will visit with each of you to make sure you are all happy and content with your lives. The chiefs all nodded their heads in a pleased manner as they glanced at each other as though in search of any dissent, but they found none, so they all looked at me with content expressions. Now that everything is clear, I said with a broad smile, let us eat, drink, and be merry. Who knows, you might even like each other by morning. Again, chuckles followed my joke, and my chest swelled with pride. I had what the desert realm needed in a leader, and I would unite the tribes forever. We spent the rest of the night enjoying the feast spread out before us, and the wine flowed freely from the serving people's hands. Laughter filled the air, and jokes were exchanged in multiple languages. We drank until the dawn light began to filter in through the windows, and the chiefs supported each other as they stumbled drunkenly to their beds. An air of camaraderie followed them as they bade me goodnight and departed, and I had high hopes for the future of the Kotar Desert. The God of Time made everything better wherever I went, and the Southern Realm wouldn't be any different.
You are so dashing.
Eva complimented with a yawn as we made our way to our personal chambers.
Oh, you are the most spellbound, my love.
Easy enough to do when we barely understand each other's languages, I said with a wry smirk. I think the new common tongue is catching on, though. I was pleasantly surprised by how easy they communicated with each other.
You mean argued with each other. They bickered like old wives, or old scholars.
Zenda added, with an amused shake of her head.
You haven't heard bickering till the priests disagree on a tome. Do you really think they'll listen to your command and return to their homes?
I have no reason to believe otherwise. I shrugged. No one wants the God of Time as their enemy.
True. You're the most powerful man in existence.
As far as we know. I muttered under my breath.
Hmm?
Zenda asked with a quizzical look. Oh, never mind. I waved a dismissive hand, but then I wrapped my arms around Kalia and Zenda's shoulders. Oh, let's hit the hay. This god's tired.
Oh, very well, my love.
Eva said as she led the way to the bedroom, and I was momentarily hypnotized by the swinging of her hips as she walked down the hallway to my king-sized bed. We all piled into bed naked together, and I slept most of the day away thanks to the room-darkening black curtains covering the windows. I was woken up by a knock on the door, and I rubbed my eyes sleepily as I pushed myself out of the beautiful pile of limbs and hair I'd nested in.
What is it? I asked as I focused my vision on the person standing on the other side of the door.
Sorry to wake you, sir.
Bryandale flashed me an apologetic smile.
The tribes are leaving, and I thought you'd like to see them off.
Thanks, Rygai, I said as I clapped him on the shoulder. I'll be down in a minute.
Yes, sir,
Bryandale saluted and turned crisply on his heels before he marched off with his back straight and his chin lifted, and I chuckled in amusement at his perfect soldier's posture. The women were all yawning and stretching when I turned back toward the bed, but I watched them move in languid motions for a moment before I grabbed my clothes. I was fully dressed in my dragon scale armor a few moments later, and the women joined me as I went to see the tribes off. A parade of people poured out of the courtyard when we exited the fortress, and I saw the chiefs all gathered over to the side as if they were waiting for me. I jerked my chin in their direction, and my women followed me across the distance to them.
"Everyone sleep well?"
I asked with an arched eyebrow.
"All is well,"
Rafidi said with a bob of his head.
"We must seize what is left of the day."
"I wish you all safe travels," I said, and I shook each of their hands one by one. "Until I see you again."
"Hopefully that will be soon,"
Chief Wumbutu said as he grasped my hand.
"Your presence is already missed among my people."
"Keep practicing the common tongue, and try to get along when you run into each other. Remember our common goal, a peaceful Kotar?" "Seems as though it is a dream," Chief Kwaki said, with the Naga still roaming free. "We'll find them and kill them all," I promised as we clasped forearms. The chiefs all nodded and smiled before they joined the rest of their people flowing out of the courtyard and down the peninsula. Most of my army was camped out on top of the land bridge, and they stood at attention as the tribespeople passed through their tents. I watched as the familiar faces of the tribespeople passed me by, and I couldn't help myself when I spotted Akina among the crowd. I reached out and grabbed her hand, and she jumped with shock as she pulled away.
Sorry. I just wanted to say goodbye."
"Oh."
Akina's metallic-hued eyes widened, and she stepped out of the procession toward me.
"I am honored, Great One."
"Please, call me Bash," I insisted for what seemed like the 100th time. "I am eager to see you again. Do you feel the same?" I held my breath as she narrowed her steel-colored eyes at me, but I could always reset to my save point if things went south.
I do."
Akina nodded to emphasize her words, as if she'd just now come to the conclusion.
"Please, visit soon."
"I will. I promise." I reached for her hand again, but this time she didn't pull away, and I brought her slender digits to my lips. I heard her breath catch as I brushed my mouth against her fingers, but I lingered until I could feel her stiffen ever so slightly. Then I released her with a flourish, and I flashed her a cheeky grin.
"You certainly have a way about you."
Akina shook her head as though dispelling a dream, and she turned back toward the procession without another word. I couldn't help the shit-eating grin that spread across my face as I returned my attention to the parade of tribespeople leaving the courtyard of the warlord's fortress. An air of mutual respect permeated the air as each movement was heard clearly across the courtyard. Every tribal member was silent as they marched away from the fortress, and I had to admit, it had been nice to have them all together while it lasted. The isolated tribes weren't used to having social interactions, though, so it would be for the best if they separated until I came up with a peaceful solution they could all agree with. Once the courtyard was empty, Rhyandale, Jorgen, and Corvus stood at attention behind me, as though they were awaiting my command, so I saluted to signal them into standing at ease. "What's on the agenda for the rest of the day?" I asked, but then I eyed the sun as it neared the western horizon far across the peninsula. "Anything fun going on?"
"Just training the men, sir," Rhyandale said. "Nothing you'd be interested in."
"Oh, yeah? Well, maybe I don't want my army getting rusty. I might have to test their skills myself, just for kicks."
"You will kick them?"
"Just a saying from my world."
"We'd be happy to have you spar with us,"
Jorgen said in an excited tone.
"It's been a while, Great One."
"After all this time, you need to call me Bash." I laughed at the hunter I'd traveled hundreds of miles with.
"We're friends, Jorgen, don't forget it."
"Yes, sir,"
the hunter chuckled, but his neck flushed with embarrassment.
"Goliath missed you, Bash, sir,"
Corvus said with a sheepish smile.
"As did all us people."
"You're the only one I'd trust with him for long," I told the horse master. I missed you too, my friend.
So we're going to see Bash in action.
Kalia cocked her hip to one side as she crossed her arms.
Sounds like a fun way to spend an afternoon. Agreed.
Zenda nodded firmly.
I think I'm going to take a nap.
Eva admitted in a hesitant tone, but then her hand lingered near her belly.
I'm not feeling so energetic these days.
Get some rest. You were up too late for someone growing another human.
Thank you, my love.
Eva sighed, and she stood on her tiptoes to press a sweet kiss against my cheek.
I'll see you at dinner time.
I'll be there. I returned the kiss, but I added a spank on her luscious booty as she walked away that made her squeal with delight. Just because she was pregnant didn't mean she wasn't totally sexy. How are you feeling, Kalia? I asked in a voice full of concern as I scanned the shopkeeper up and down.
Just fine, Bash.
Kalia laughed, and her light brown curls bounced like Tigger's tail. Oh, then let's get some training in. I grinned as I stretched my arms and neck. I'm ready to teach these soldiers a thing or two. I can't wait to see what you have in store for them, sir, Ryandale said, and he jerked his chin beyond the wall of the fortress. Follow me. Ryandale led us through the maze of soldiers' tents to a vast open space on the bottom of the peninsula, and a large group of men and women in armor had already gathered into rows. They all saluted me when I walked up, and I returned the gesture in kind to as many as I could. I felt like the president who was about to give a State of the Union address or something, but I really just wanted to spar with some of the soldiers who'd followed me all this way. Line up! Ryandale shouted in the commanding tone, and the soldiers jumped into formation. The general marched along the front of the line, and he analyzed the stances of his men and women closely. Raise your hand if you wish to spar with the God of Time! Hundreds of hands flew into the air simultaneously, and I guffawed at the eagerness of my soldiers. Then I scanned over the waiting faces, and I pointed to one at random. You there! Step forward and present arms.
I am Tosha.
The woman in sturdy leather armor stepped forward and saluted me crisply before she flourished her two-handed sword.
You honor me, great one.
Are you ready? I arched an eyebrow as I twirled my panabas.
I was born ready, sir.
Tasha said without hesitation, and she charged forward without warning. I easily blocked her attack, and I spun around to whack the back of her thighs with the flat of my blade. It was harmless, but it threw her slightly off balance, and she stumbled slightly before spinning around to face me once more. I continued to spar and train with random soldiers for the following hours before sunset, but the light was quickly fading when I heard a cry of alarm from one of the soldiers. I turned to see what the commotion was, and I spotted three desert dwellers approaching. With their black robes and white veils, it was easy to pick them out as members of the Kanwaki tribe. But once they drew closer, I recognized the builds of Mikino, Akina, and Ristuni. As soon as I realized who they were, I rushed forward to greet the familiar faces with a broad smile, and Mikino was the first to clasp forearms with me.
We came back to serve the Great One of Legend, Mikino said in his own dialect.
I welcome you into my people, I said in the same tongue. But then my gaze flicked to Akina, and I wondered what role she'd played in their return. What does the chief say about this?
He told us to go with his blessing,
Ristuni said as he embraced me in a warm hug. The younger man was more friendly than his taller compatriot, and his unusual style of warmth was welcome among the usually stoic desert dwellers. And you, Akina? I arched an eyebrow as I considered the desert beauty. Did you come willingly?
I wish to serve the greatest warrior I've ever known.
The warrior woman said, with a proud lift of her chin, and her metallic eyes met mine with confidence.
You're all more than welcome, I said, and I couldn't help the shit-eating grin that spread across my face. You'll have seats of honor at my table each night.
Do you plan to stay here?
Akina tilted her head to the side with curiosity. Not for long. I shook my head. We'll talk more about that later.
Very well.
Akina folded her hands together and nodded calmly.
I look forward to it.
I admired her self-control, but I couldn't wait until I caused her to act flustered. The newcomers joined us in the final rounds of sparring, and they gave my soldiers a run for their money. But I was proud to see my men and women holding their own against the flame-sword-wielding badasses. Once the light was completely extinguished from the horizon, torches were lit, and celebrations began. I mingled with the soldiers for a while, and I made sure they were all happy with their lots in life, before I retired to the fortress for the night. I was already tipsy from several mugs of ale with my warriors when I stumbled into bed, but then I felt the soft, familiar hands of my women pulling off my armor and clothes. I passed out, spread-eagle, across the fur-covered, king-sized bed, and I woke up the next morning with a yawn and a stretch. I was surprised to find myself alone, but after two late nights in a row, I was grateful for the uninterrupted sleep. I felt well-rested, though, so I was eager to start tackling my to-do list. A quick bath, fresh clothes, and a breakfast of oatmeal and fresh biscuits had me feeling on top of the world, and then I went in search of my companions. I found my women talking to Ryandale, Jorgen, and Corvus in the courtyard, but I spotted Makino, Akina, and Ristuni training nearby. The three Kanwaki tribespeople had set up camp in the courtyard, but I would make a point to give them their own rooms in the fortress later. "Hey, Rygai, Jorgen, Corvus!" I greeted each man with a nod, but then I turned and kissed each of my women before I continued. "I have big plans, and it's time to get started on them."
"What's your command, sir?"
Ryandale asked. "We leave a garrison of trusted men to run the fortress in our absence. You can stay behind and oversee their further training and watch shifts if you'd like. Claim the fort as your own while I'm gone. Live like a king for a little while."
"Sounds good, sir. I'll pick a few trusted men to guard the inner halls, but I'll leave the majority of our forces garrisoned on the peninsula."
"What about us, Bash?"
Jorgen shuffled anxiously as his eyes flicked to his friend Corvus.
"Can we come with you this time?"
"Of course." I clapped the hunter on the shoulder and flashed Corvus a warm smile. "You and your platoons should escort me on my first quest. We're going to the catacombs in the oasis, where the entire village died. It's a dangerous mission, so be sure to bring your A-game."
"What kind of game is that?"
Zenda asked, as though she was about to take some notes on the subject.
It's just a saying from my world."
"We will give our all to whatever tasks you hand us, sir,"
Corvus promised in a solemn tone.
"It is an honor to travel with you again. I shall prepare the horses."
"Where are you going, Great One?"
Makino asked in a curious tone as he crossed the distance to me, and he extinguished the flame sword in his grasp as he walked.
"Oh, you understood my language?" I couldn't help the look of surprise on my face.
"You kept glancing out the gate,"
the Kanwaki man said with a sheepish smile.
"It seemed as though you were planning a trip from your body language."
"Oh, yeah, you're spot on. Want to come with us?"
"We follow you, sir,"
Akina said with a determined gleam in her steel-colored eyes.
"Besides, you plan to roam the desert without any locals to guide you?"
Ristuni smirked.
"We know these lands better than anyone, since we roam the sands without claiming any one spot as our permanent home."
"Good point," I grinned. "Glad to have you along."
With that settled, we began our preparations for departure once more, but I wanted to spend one more night in the amazing king-sized bed left behind by the asshole warlord. At least something good came out of my interactions with him. We ate a feast with the three Kanwaki tribespeople, and I told stories about Soreal to the desert dwellers as we ate. It was early evening when we all said goodnight and turned in, but we had plans to leave on our quest at first light, so we all needed our rest. I woke up early and was ready to get going, so I quickly donned my gear and strapped my weapons to my waist. The girls met me in the hallway, and they all had their armor on and packs strapped to their shoulders. We were able to travel a lot lighter without having to feed the entire army, but I made a mental note to check on the stores of food available for the men and women we were leaving behind at the fortress. Corvus and Jorgen were already in the courtyard when the four of us emerged from the fortress, but the three Kanwaki people quickly exited the building behind us.
"How did you sleep?"
I asked Akina as I slowed my pace to match hers.
"Hopefully better than you did when you were outside?"
"I slept well, Great One, thank you,"
Akina murmured, and a blush darkened her tanned cheeks.
I appreciate the rooms, even if for one night.
I also slept well, Ristuni announced in a teasing tone. If anyone cared.
Of course I care, I chuckled as I patted him on the back, but the motion jostled him forward so he had to skip to maintain his balance. Ah, you're one of my top favorite desert dwellers, kid.
Thank you, Great One.
Ristuni's eyes lit up with delight, and he practically floated above the ground. He was radiating so much happiness. We loaded up the horses, and I spent some time petting and visiting with Goliath before we all mounted up. The all-white stallion had been with me for a long time, and he put up with being left behind a lot of the time now that I had the fast travel amulets. But he was well taken care of whenever we were apart. There was no one I trusted more with my horse than Corvus, and I knew he took special care of Goliath. Then we rode out through the rows of white tents that dotted the peninsula, and we quickly crossed over to the desert mainland, where the soldiers waved and saluted us. Nameless flew overhead in wide arcs, but I wasn't worried about the little dragon getting lost anymore. He'd managed to keep up with me so far, so I let him have a longer metaphorical leash than ever before. I cast one last glance behind me before I turned to the western horizon, and I made a save point before we went any further. But I knew the fortress was in good hands with Ryandale in charge. We rode hard without talking for most of the day, but we paused briefly to have a midday meal when the sun was at its zenith. Conversation was light and mostly revolved around what was available to eat and drink, but everyone seemed to be in high spirits when we remounted our steeds and carried on. I called it a day when the first stars became apparent in the twilight sky, and I marveled at the beauty of the raw desert before me as we made camp. We worked together to pitch a few tents in a circle around a fire pit, and then I used my fire magic to ignite the tinder. After we ate, we all sat and stared into the orange, yellow, and blue flames as they slowly ate away at the scrub brush we were burning. We would find less burnable tinder further away from the coastline, and we would have to go back to burning the animals' scat. But for now, I enjoyed the smell of the sage-like bushes.
Tell us about your world, Great One,
Ristuni requested into the calm silence.
Well, what's to tell?
I shrugged one shoulder. It's so different from this world, it would take me all night to explain the details.
Did your mother tell you stories when you were growing up? Like we have about the Naga?
Oh, well, sure. I grinned at the desert beauty.
I can tell you guys a nursery rhyme or something.
Anything.
Makino said.
Yes, Bash. We'd all love to hear a tale from Earth.
All right. I chuckled, but then I ran a hand through my hair as I thought about what story to tell. Okay. So, once upon a time, there were three little pigs. After I finished telling the story about the big bad wolf blowing down the different houses, my audience laughed in slight confusion, but then they each took turns telling stories from their childhoods. The evening passed by quickly, and we all smiled in contentment as we said our goodnights and entered our separate tents. Then I laid on my sleeping roll with my hands tucked beneath my head as thoughts floated in and out of my mind. Was the god of the purge really from Earth? I shook my head to dispel the intrusive thought, but I had a feeling I was getting closer to some kind of answer with the catacombs. The unexplained deaths of the entire village full of people was worrisome, but I'd cleaned out every inch of the oasis already, so I didn't think there was any danger in returning. Whatever laid beyond that cryptic door, I would soon find out. We set out again early the next morning, and we followed the same pattern over the course of the next few days. We were getting closer and closer to the catacombs and the surrounding oasis, and everyone's energy remained high. I was feeling good when one of Jorgen's scouts returned with dire news. Naga were coming our way from the southern horizon. Time for the god of death to emerge again.